President Trump is, as the president calls himself, a stable genius.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm pretty sure that is what your entire week has sounded like, because that's definitely what my entire week has sounded like. Stable genius with horse jokes galore. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 235. I want to thank you so much for being here. I want to get into where we're at on the Russia probe. I want to get into the Bannon firing. I want to get into the funding for the Republican Party. So we have a lot of news and not a lot of time. Let's roll, kids.
In a string of early morning tweets on Saturday, the president defended his mental fitness, claiming now that Russian collusion, after 1 year of intense study, has proven to be a total hoax on the American public, the Democrats and their lapdogs, the fake news mainstream media, are taking out the old Ronald Reagan playbook and screaming mental stability and intelligence, he goes on. Actually, throughout my life, my two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, like, really smart.
Like, really
smart. Wait, why did he
smart.
Put like in there?
Like, you know, like, well, kind of like, it's a Valley Girl
speak. Is he doing
speak.
Valley Girl speak?
No, that's
a,
I guess that's how they
You wasted six characters?
I guess that's how they
Not very smart.
Him.
I don't refer to it as Valley Girl speak. I refer to it as brain dead moron, and my apologies to the millennials, to the high school kids and the middle school kids, because I hear this language. I'm like, so like, and then like, and so I was like, and then like, I've talked about it here on the show, how nuts it makes me that, okay, so we have a 71-year-old man as president, and we put him in there because we were pretty damn sure that, well, I wasn't, because I've got a brain in my head, but he assured everyone he's going to put the absolute best people in every single position of government. And what we've seen is obviously the exact opposite. There's been a mass exodus of tons and tons of people from the White House. I think, and I don't know if it'll happen by the time this show comes out, I think that Jeff Sessions is going to be next. Because see, the person that's overseeing the Russia investigation that's in the FBI right now, he has to be, if he's to be fired, he has to be fired by Sessions, the head of the Justice Department. And Sessions has already recused himself from the whole Russia matter. So he can't do that. So what Trump wants to do is he wants Sessions out so that he can put somebody in that position that will fire the guy over at the FBI who is overseeing the Russian. The best guys. I remember when Trump got elected and I was reading on all the white supremacist platforms, because the first three people he hired were, of course, Jeff Sessions and Steve Bannon, and then, of course, Michael Flynn. And you could jump on any one of the white supremacist platforms, and they were so happy. I read more than a few comments that said, and I quote, "It's almost like President Trump, or President-elect Trump, got our Christmas wish list." Think about that. Our Christmas wish list. These are white supremacists. These are people who identify as, a lot of them identify as Nazis. And they say, he got our wish list. Flynn, out. Was colluding with Russia. Bannon, out. We'll get into that in a little bit. Sessions is going to be next. And he's going to be next because he recused himself from the Russia investigation. Oh, but the best people, man.
President Trump's pick to fill one of the most powerful positions in the country is raising quite a few eyebrows on this Friday. Matthew Peterson is President Trump's nominee to be a lifetime U.S. District Court judge, and he struggled to answer some basic questions about the law during his confirmation hearing Thursday. Let's take a look at just one of the exchanges with Republican Senator John Kennedy.
Have any of you not tried a case to verdict in a courtroom, Mr. Peterson? Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Have you ever argued a motion in state court?
I have not.
Have you ever argued a motion in federal court?
No.
Just for the record, do you know what a motion in limine is?
I would probably not be able to give you a good definition okay. right here at the table.
Do you know what the Younger abstention doctrine is?
I've heard of it, but I, again...
That, how about the Pullman abstention doctrine?
I heard
you're going to see, you'll all see that a lot in federal court.
Now again, to be clear, that's a Republican senator there.
Do you know your name? Do you know where you're at? Do you know who I am? The accusations that have been made on this show, or on really any other progressive show, we're seeing all that stuff come into light very quickly. The president has never been healthy. The president has never been stable. This president in particular. We knew what we were getting during the campaign. And yet, 59 million people turned out anyway and pulled the lever for this guy. We knew exactly what we were going to get. It's almost like we elected to shoot ourselves in the foot, and it's amazing. But see, I'm not in the White House, and you're not in the White House. I'm assuming nobody at the White House listens to this show. But there was a guy who was given unprecedented access to the White House. So, Michael Wolff, the guy who wrote the Fire and Fury book, which sold out like crazy because Trump tried to ban it. He was given unfettered access to the White House. Now, if you don't know, Wolf is a conservative. And he wrote a book about the owner of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, a number of years back. And so this is why the Trump White House was pretty damn sure that he was just going to write a big puff piece type book about the Trump White House. And when he got inside, obviously, things took an interesting turn.
AP Radio News. I'm Ed Donahue. President Trump wants to stop the release of a book that paints an unflattering picture of him. The AP's Sankar Magani has the story from the White House.
One of the president's lawyers has sent a cease and desist letter to Michael Wolff, who wrote Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House, and another to the book's publisher, demanding they stop publication and the release of any excerpts. The lawyer also wants a complete retraction and apology to the president, whom the book portrays as an undisciplined man-child who spends evenings eating cheeseburgers in bed while watching TV. It's due to be published next week, but excerpts have already been released. The White House calls it trashy tabloid fiction.
He may as well have bought every single copy of the book himself the day that he tried to ban it. And to hear AP have to report about the undisciplined man-child that is president. I have the AP app on my phone, and I get these news alerts. And they flash up on my screen if I allow them to. And I do, because when news breaks, I definitely want it. And for the first time in all the years that I've had that app on my phone, I probably had it on my phone about 5-6 years now. All the years I've had that app on my phone, the news headlines that flash across my screen, and if I want to read deeper into them, I just tap the headline and it'll open up the full story. So it just gives me the headlines. And this today, the headline came across my phone about how Trump called African countries S-holes, S-H-holes. I think if you use the swears, you know what I'm talking about. And the AP headline on my phone spelled the word out. It's the first time I've ever had a swear come across my phone from an official news agency. This is the fiction that we live right now. And it's absolutely amazing. But I'm not surprised, and most of us aren't. One of the hallmarks about the man-child president was the fact that he's a bully. He says a lot of really tough things on Twitter. There's a bunch of polls that just came out about him right now. And the polls go like this. Somewhere in the number of area of 60 to 70% see him as unstable and unhealthy, and dishonest, and untrustworthy. But about that same number also see him as strong. So if the economy goes in the tank, or we end up in a war, the fact that he's a liar, the fact that he's a man-child, the fact that he picks fights with other countries and claims or has fights with the leader of North Korea about who's got the bigger button, the whole strength thing, I think that's what could lead to his reelection. Yeah, people don't like him, and they see him as a liar. But they also see him as strong. And so that might get them to reelect him. But this Twitter fingers thing, and that's what it's called. When you tweet, what a tough guy you are. But in all honesty, you're really not.
Trump and the FBI not turned out to be a great relationship. Donald Trump's been attacking that institution, claiming its reputation is in tatters and the worst in history. And he's talked a lot about what's wrong with the FBI. Today, though, Donald Trump decided to go speak to the FBI. There was a graduation ceremony, and suddenly his tune changed to all praise.
Being a police officer is not just a career, it's a calling, and I've seen it. I have so many friends that are police officers, so many people in the FBI. These are great, great people. These are really heroes for all of us. So thank you very much.
Great people, heroes, thank you. The whole thing was like that. This is classic Donald Trump fronting. Plays tough on Twitter, but then he doesn't back it up in person. There is a saying for this. It's called Twitter fingers. And it's when you type tougher than you are. Ladies and gentlemen, that's your president before the FBI today.
No mention of the fact that he fired the head of the FBI. No mention of the fact that he's now trying to fire the deputy acting head of the FBI. Luke Vargas talked about this back when Trump went to China. And I thought that Luke's take was particularly good on this. And so I want to go ahead and give you that right now.
The president has moved past Beijing and now has taken this marathon Asia trip onto its penultimate leg. So he's in Vietnam now. And I think what was really telling to watch about how, you know, his departure about, let's say, 12 hours ago from China to Vietnam is it didn't take him very long to get off Chinese territory before he really started unloading on Chinese trade practices. It was relatively cordial between him and President Xi Jinping while he was in Beijing. And then he changed his tune almost immediately and began to criticize a number of things about how China does business. He complained about the high barriers to entry for American companies trying to get into China. He talked about the corporate espionage, the theft of American intellectual property. He complained that American companies are still forced to enter into joint ventures with China in order to gain access to that country's economy. All those things are true. And we have seen from the from the Trump administration so far, they've been taking formal steps to go after investigating through the U.S. Trade Representative's office the issue of the IP theft. Congress is, of course, at this point looking into Chinese investments in key American economic sectors. And so these are not surprising. It's just I think it was a rather stunning change of heart just because he really was palling up with Xi Jinping.
Let me give you where we're at with the Russia investigation right now. All right, so I want to put this in the simplest possible terms because there's a lot of layers to this story. What we know based on the intelligence so far is that there was collusion. There was definitely some sort of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. We know that. We know of at least half a dozen people from the Trump campaign that were talking to Russian government officials. And we know that either by their admission or by the Kremlin's admission. See, Trump has talked with Putin probably about four or five times since he became president. And we know that not because Trump told us. We know that because Putin told the state government or the state-run news, and then they told the American media. It wasn't because he told our media that he was going to meet with Putin or had met with Putin. but it's because Putin went to his media and their media came to our media. That's how we find out about these things. If he has nothing to hide, why not tell us? So the Republicans in Congress this week decided to finally, it is time to bring some people to justice. It is time that we have charges in this investigation. This Russia thing is serious, and it's absolutely high time that somebody gets charged. So the Republicans in government, in your House, in your Senate, got together, and they said, who deserves to be investigated and potentially indicted over this Russia thing? Just put their fist on the table, right? Oh, wait, there's more. So we know that half a dozen, at least, Trump officials talked to the Russian government. But who did they decide should be investigated? Christopher Steele. If that name doesn't sound familiar to you, Christopher Steele is a British intelligence officer. And he worked in tandem with a group called Fusion GPS. And they put together the dossier, the Trump dossier. So the Trump dossier started like this. Some American billionaire who did not want Donald Trump to be the nominee, I think in about April or May of 2016, he decided to hire Fusion GPS to find some dirt on Donald Trump, which he was then going to use against Donald Trump, so that Donald Trump could not become the nominee for the Republican Party. Then when Donald Trump became the nominee for the Republican Party, they said, well, you know what? As far as billionaires go, they would much rather a Republican win, even if it's Donald Trump. They didn't want Donald Trump. He wasn't their first choice, but they're cool with him winning now that he's the nominee, because can't have Hillary. So Fusion GPS, they had their money. And you have to pay up front if you want them to do this kind of work for you. You got to pay up front. You got to retain them. I heard a representative from Fusion GPS talking about this. You have to retain them for at least 30 days. And you got to pay cash up front. This isn't a trade. So once Trump became the nominee, he backed out. The billionaire backed out. He said, no. And we still don't know who this billionaire is. Then the Clinton campaign found out about the dossier. They decided to go ahead and pay Fusion GPS for that research. And so they kept doing that research. A lot of good it did, because she still didn't win. Christopher Steele found out during the course of that investigation that representatives or officials with the Trump campaign were talking to the Russians. Here's the way that goes. When they talk to you, when another government talks to your campaign, and it's not an open thing, they're trying to be secretive, you're supposed to tell the FBI. Christopher Steele found out about the contacts between the Russians and the Trump administration, or the Trump campaign, and Christopher Steele, working for Fusion GPS, went to the FBI and said, hey, the Russian government is talking with Trump officials. So far, what Christopher Steele is doing is legal. And what the Trump campaign is doing is illegal. Stay with me. The dossier finally finds the light of day. An American journalist. Now, we haven't been able to go through every part of it and check out every single thing that's in the dossier. But everything that we have found inside the dossier has been proven. There's lots of things that haven't been investigated, but what we have investigated has been proven. So the dossier is real, the dossier is true, and the dossier is a threat to the Trump administration. After the election, when Christopher Steele got found out by the Trump administration, he had to go into hiding. He decided to hide because he was afraid for his safety and the safety is of his family because of what the Trump administration might do to him over this dossier. He has testified before Congress about the dossier. And this week, Dianne Feinstein forced the release of some of those transcripts, so we know a lot more about it now. And the reason why she felt so compelled to force the release of those was to get this into the public record before it could be destroyed. See, the Republicans that were there for the testimony, they didn't want this stuff out once they found out how damning it was to Trump. Remember, during the election, not even the Republicans liked him, but he's president now, and this is tribal, and they're all going to stick together. So we know about the members of the Trump campaign and now the Trump administration that have talked to the Russians and did not go to the FBI about being contacted by the Russians. And Christopher Steele, when he found out about those, he went to the FBI. So the Republicans in Congress said that we need to investigate and potentially indict the guy, Christopher Steele, who actually followed the law. I love the name. It's Christopher. It's like a spy novel. And so that's where we're at with this investigation. If we end up surviving Trump as president, and I was listening to a nuclear scientist talk about a week or two ago, and he said that there's an 80% chance that we could see a nuclear war. Trump was talking pretty recently about with his White House about the idea of maybe doing what he referred to as a soft strike on North Korea. Just drop a couple bombs and teach them a lesson. Apparently, Trump thinks life is like a video game. But two problems. First of all, China. China said that if we strike first, they will not side with us. They will not be an ally. And the other thing, and I've heard this from no shortage of senators and generals and all the rest, people that know Kim Jong-un, people that know North Korea, there will be no soft strike. To drop a bomb or two and think that you're going to scare a guy who's not afraid of death and is trying to level his entire country, a country full of his people, when those bombs fall, he will hit us with everything that he has. But this is the unstable prick that we're dealing with right now. And this is one of the reasons that it's frustrating to me. Not everyone has to be into this. And I say this all the time. Not everyone has to be into this like I'm into this. But you need to be into this to some degree. Because if a nuclear war starts, if a nuclear war is carried out, the bombs aren't going to fall on, you know, Hillary supporters only, and Trump supporters only, you know, Stein supporters, or whether you're into politics. It's going to kill everybody indiscriminately. The reason I got into this in 2001, and I'm not kidding, prior to that, I couldn't have told you the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, but there was something different about George W. Bush that I'd never seen in any other president, and it made me want to get involved in this. Now that I'm involved in this, I kind of wish I wasn't involved in this. Ignorance really is bliss, as they say, but now that I'm into this, I can't get the hell out of it. And now that I'm in it, I feel foolish for all those years that I wasn't into it. If we survive the Trump administration, I hope that going forward, this idea of people running for president, and just about every single Republican does this, a lot of Democrats do this too, the idea of running for president as a business, like that's your business is running for president, I hope that idea dies. Because with as often as we do that, we have these men and women that run for president just so they can get better name recognition, just so they can raise their brand, just so they can command more in speaking fees. The fact that we have people that run for president just for that, we had to know that one of these days, one of those people that really didn't want to be president was going to win.
Michael Wolff's book, much of which has not been confirmed by NBC News, alleges that senior staffers at the White House have low opinions of the president's intelligence. Quote, Trump didn't read. He didn't really even skim. If it was print, it might as well not exist. Some believed that for all practical purposes, he was no more than semi-literate. For Steve Mnuchin and Reince Priebus, he was an idiot. For Gary Cohn, he was dumb as blank. For H.R. McMaster, he was a dope. And the list went on. Wolf also writes this, quote, in April, an email originally copied to more than a dozen people went into far wider circulation when it was forwarded and re-forwarded, purporting to represent the views of Gary Cohn and quite succinctly summarizing the appalled sense in much of the White House. This is what the email said, quote, it's worse than you can imagine. An idiot surrounded by clowns. Trump won't read anything, not one-page memos, not the brief policy papers, nothing. He gets up halfway through meetings with world leaders because he's bored, and his staff is no better. Kushner is an entitled baby who knows nothing. Bannon is an arrogant expletive who thinks he's smarter than he is. Trump is less a person than a collection of terrible traits. No one will survive the first year but his family. I hate the work, but I feel I need to stay because I'm the only person there with a clue what he's doing. The reason so few jobs have been filled is that they only accept people who pass ridiculous purity tests, even for mid-level policymaking jobs, where the people will never see the light of day. I am in a constant state of shock and horror. A senior White House official tells NBC News that Cohn never wrote such an email, and claims about his thinking in the book are 100% untrue.
After the book came out, and I remember seeing lineup at our bookstore here, our biggest bookstore in town, which is called Powell's, I was driving by, like a Thursday or Friday morning, and I saw a big-ass line outside of Powell's. The bloody hell is going on? Oh, the book. They sold out right away. The problem with the book isn't that it's untrue or you know, tabloid journalism or any of the crap that David Duke says that it is. The problem with the book is that it's true. And it really, really got to Trump. So Trump decided, you know what? Immigration is his issue. And he's going to go ahead and hold a meeting at the White House with Democrats and Republicans. He didn't want to have Democrats there, but he's been told by no fewer than 1,000 people, I'm using hyperbole here, that 2018 is going to be a bloodbath for him. The House and the Senate will likely turn completely over to Democrats. There have been 30 Republicans. I think the Republicans hold out like a 24-seat majority in the House right now. There are 30 Republicans in that, and you have to run every 2 years in the House. 30 Republicans that have said that they are either quitting right now or they are not going to run again this year. That opens up those seats. The most certain way to get a seat is to be an incumbent. If you held that seat last year, you're likely going to hold it next year too. But with those seats opening up, and with the supposed blue wave coming, he says, okay, fine. We'll bring the Democrats in too. So he sits down across from Democrats and Republicans because he wants to show everybody what a fantastic deal maker he is. And he brings the cameras into the room and refers to this room as the studio. So he thinks he's on TV. No joke, he called it the studio. And he sits Democrats or Republicans down, and they start talking, and he takes both sides of every issue. I want a clean bill. I don't want a clean bill. And they go, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. Clean bill means no wall. Are you sure that's what you mean? Oh, no, 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 no. I don't want a clean bill. He takes every side of every issue, and then he says this. He says, whatever you put on my desk, even if I don't like it, I'm going to sign it. Oh, yeah. That's deal making. That's leadership. It was pretty embarrassing. And it really just illustrated what's in the book. So, of course, the media, CNN, MSNBC, field day with this. Holy hell, Look at how dumb he is.
Well, it also comes at a time when this book paints a picture of a White House where people who are closest to him are mocking him. They all have names for him. I'm going to, again, quote this book, Fire and Fury. There was now a fair amount of back of the classroom giggling about who had called Trump what. For Steve Mnuchin and Reince Priebus, he was an idiot. For Gary Cohn, and he was dumb as, I can't say the word, because... it's daytime television. For H.R. McMaster, he was a dope. The list went on. Tillerson would merely become yet another example of subordinates who believe that his own abilities could somehow compensate for Trump's failings.
But what did Republicans say? What did Republicans say about the meeting? Well, the Republicans loved it. They thought it was great. Look at him up there making those deals. So, paraphrasing from Rush Limbaugh here, Rush Limbaugh says that there he was. Sitting down with those Democrats and those Republicans, telling him what he wants and taking charge. He said, and he let the Democrats talk. And he says, so the takeaway from the liberal media about this is that he was dumb. He was disconnected. He didn't know what he was doing. But let me tell you what I saw, my friends. What I saw is Trump, President Trump, getting those Democrats and putting them on record. Oh yeah, he might have looked dumb, but he wasn't. He was smart. He knew what he was. He was getting those Democrats on reels. Open border Democrats. They just want to fly the borders open and let everybody in. No security in America. But he got them on record in that meeting, and that's what he did. For anybody who saw any part of that meeting, the Democrats didn't say anything that they hadn't said before. But the president is an absolute moron. So what are you going to do? So Steve Bannon, in a moment of clarity and honesty, said some pretty disparaging things about Trump. And I believe that, I'm sure he'd like to deny them now. But apparently, Wolf has audio recordings of everything that's in the book. So if they want to start challenging it, and they do, well, he's got the audio recordings. Y'all messed up. So Steve Bannon says some unfun things about Trump and gets called out about it. And then he loses his job at Breitbart. So how in the hell did that happen? So it goes like this. Andrew Breitbart started the website, Breitbart.com. And he started it as just another right-wing media rag. Just some place for all the right-wingers to go. Sort of like a Drudge or a Fox News. Then after Andrew Breitbart died, I believe there was an interim editor. But then Steve Bannon came in. And that's how Breitbart became the top news for the alt-right or the Nazis or white supremacists, whatever phrase you want to use. But once it turned that way, they started getting a lot of money from billionaires because this became the new Drudge. I mean, all the conservatives went to this website. They loved the view that they got on this website.
Where does Breitbart go from here? I mean, on one hand, I look at Breitbart and I think, if Steve Bannon had all of this extraordinary content, why didn't he give it to his own platform? Instead, he sits down with Gabe Sherman and Vanity Fair. He gives Michael Wolff the bestseller of bestsellers. Why didn't he give all this pure fire to his own platform?
Well, I think much like his former boss, Donald Trump, Steve Bannon wants the acceptance and the coverage of the mainstream media, of the elite media. That's very important to him.
Really? And he uses the word JUMO.
Well, you know, as these guys like to bash on the media, they still want it. And when they don't get it, they complain about it. So I think that's part of what's going on here. But the other thing that's important about the fallout from this, there's a lot of question right now about whether the funding structure for Steve Bannon and Breitbart, the Mercers, are still on Team Bannon. There's even right now speculation that there might be an effort to kick Bannon out of Breitbart. So there are some major reverberations from this, and Bannon could very well end up being on an island all by himself.
And just like that, that's the way it happened. So Why and how did it happen that way? As soon as he says something terrible about Trump, and he is the leader of, effectively the leader of the white supremacist movement in this country. When they want news, they go to Stormfront or they go to Breitbart. But now he's out of a job. So how in the hell did this happen? There are two major contributors to the Breitbart platform, this white supremacist platform. And that is, of course, the Koch brothers, and another couple you may or may not have heard of. It's a father-daughter team. And it's Robert and Rebecca Mercer, father and daughter, the Mercers. They give a ton of money to the Breitbart platform. And after Bannon left the White House, he went back to Breitbart. And then when this book came out, the Mercers said, get rid of him. Get rid of him, or there will be no more money for this platform.
Welcome back to Velche and Rule. I'm Stephanie Rule. Just moments ago, the president continued his barrage on Steve Bannon, saying, quote, the Mercer family recently dumped the leaker known as Sloppy Steve Bannon. Smart. Well, the Mercers are a very wealthy father-daughter duo. They have signaled a severing of ties with the former White House chief strategist, Rebecca Mercer, saying in a rare statement that she and her family do not support Bannon's recent actions and statements. The Mercers are huge boosters of the right-wing movements. The family's fierce privacy makes it hard to pin down their exact net worth, but CNBC and Forbes estimate Bob Mercer's wealth, which comes from his hedge fund, may be in the hundreds of millions, maybe over $1 billion. The blow to Bannon comes particularly hard as the media shy Mercers reportedly invested $10 million in Bannon's website, Breitbart. The pair also regularly contribute to conservative groups, $2.5 million to the Koch brothers Freedom Partners Action Fund, and more than $1 million to super PACs like Club for Growth. That is on top of the $25 million they spent during the 2016 campaign, according to Forbes. In March, Bannon told The New Yorker they laid the groundwork for the Trump revolution. And now there's word the board of Breitbart is debating whether to jettison Bannon altogether. Talk likely spurred by the Mercer's position on the conservative firebrand. Mercer said the family provided no financial support to Bannon's political agenda. In months, they have allegedly been out of contact. A long way to fall since October, when Rebecca Mercer hosted a party right here in New York City at her Upper West Side apartment, where Steve Bannon was her personal guest.
I prepared so many of these clips in anticipation of predicting that Bannon was going to get fired. And then, of course, Bannon got fired before I could even go on the freaking air with this stuff. So, the white supremacist movement. Yeah, they're Nazis and white supremacists and all the rest, but they're a very motivated voting bloc. And that's why it's so important to people like the Kochs and the Mercers and all the rest of these billionaires. That's why it's so important to get their attention, to get in their minds. See, the vast majority of America, somewhere between 60 and 70%, are definitely not with Trump or the Trump agenda. But somehow, him and the Republicans have the entire government. And going into this year, especially this year's elections, you're going to see more and more of this, where these billionaires are dumping money into candidates and dumping money into news organizations that push their agenda. I don't know that the Mercers are really white supremacists. They're probably not. I don't know that the Kochs and the Adelsons and all the rest, I don't know that they're white supremacists. I don't know what their views are on race. But they know that if they support these platforms that push racial animus, then those people are going to turn out to vote for conservatives, and those conservatives are going to turn out to give the billionaires what they want. None of this. For the billionaire backers of the Republican Party, none of this really has to do with race. Yeah, they're able to get these dumb rubes out there to vote for these conservative candidates. But I don't think these billionaires really care. They just want to make sure that they're getting what they want legislatively. And if they have to bring the Nazis along by telling them what they want to hear, They're completely okay with that.
Isolationism, racism in some cases, very much alive and well in the Republican Party.
Absolutely, and it's really unfortunate. But I don't think that's a new thing, because there's always been the dog whistles. I think what Steve Bannon did was remove any pretense.
These were bullhorns.
Exactly. So everyone could hear it. People of color listening to Trump could see what he was saying when he came down the escalator, said Mexicans are rapists, they're not sending their best people. We understood that as racism well before Charlottesville.
And well before Bannon was a part.
Absolutely.
I mean, to that point, Trump's right. He achieved all those things without Steve Bannon.
Without Steve Bannon. And I would also say that when Steve Bannon joined the campaign, it essentially put down a marker. I remember that week when we were trying to figure out how to message and essentially alarm, you know, bring the alarm to the American people that Steve Bannon is a white nationalist, right? And that this is not run-of-the-mill dog whistles or, you know, politics and policies that are not going to help people of color, for example. This is Nazis. This is something different than we had seen before. And I think that is there to stay, because Republicans never really stood up to Steve Bannon, when he was quoted in a book saying negative things about the president.
Trump is all alone in the White House. There are a lot of reports coming out that he absolutely hates it. He does not want to be there. Melania doesn't want to be there. My God, he just wants to go back to being a billionaire and stealing money and dealing with the Russians. And he's becoming increasingly isolated. And his mental state was already not great going into this situation. And it just got 10 times worse. I think the only thing that you're going to see this president trying to do for the remainder of his presidency, or really just the remainder of this year, which is all I anticipate him lasting, is just trying to hold on to that teeny tiny piece of the electorate that got him there. It's the only people, also only people he's talking to. It's the only people he's trying to do anything for right now. And he's got nobody in the White House, but he's going to try to hold on to those Nazis and rednecks, because God dang it, that's all he has left.
Donald Trump is more isolated than he's ever been. You know, really, the Breitbart base is the last bastion of solid support that Donald Trump has. You know, the people around him, like you mentioned, Gary Cohn and others, have no respect for him. And so, you know, he can trash on Steve Bannon, but where is he going to go fundamentally? He can't run into the arms of the establishment Republicans. They don't respect him. The Democrats, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, we know, have no interest in working for him, maybe perhaps on infrastructure. But so to me, I read it as Donald Trump is more isolated than ever. He's really on an island with maybe himself and his children.
I pulled this other clip I'm about to play when it came out a few months ago. And there was all kinds of talk about what happened to the president at that moment. So he's giving a speech, and then he begins slurring.
Let us rethink old assumptions and open our hearts and minds to possible and possibilities. And finally, I ask the leaders of the region, political and religious, Israeli and Palestinian, Jewish and Christian and Muslim, to join us in the noble quest for lasting peace. Thank you. God bless you. God bless Israel. God bless the Palestinians. And God bless the United States. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The unfortunate thing about that clip is when it came out, a lot of people were just making fun. Now, I don't like Trump. I'm never going to like Trump. But when I heard that clip, I go, that's a medical issue. We don't know anything about this guy's medical state. There's that quack doctor who wrote that joke letter about how he's going to be the healthiest person ever elected to the office of the presidency. He doesn't read. He doesn't exercise. And he eats nothing but fast food. The healthiest guy ever. And I heard that. And a lot of people speculate, his false teeth are falling out. I go, yeah, I've seen that, and I've heard what that sounds like. I've got relatives with false teeth. So, but I don't think it's that. I think something mental is beginning to slip. He might have had a minor stroke. I don't know. But he's supposed to see a real doctor, not that quack with the long hair. He's supposed to see a real medical doctor, an army doctor. And that's supposed to come up this month. I thought it was supposed to have happened already. I'm trying to watch this. I'll keep you updated. You know, you can also peep Google yourself. But with that, a lot of people are super curious about what's going to come out of it, because we do. We've got a ton of questions about his mental state, but the physical that he's going to get isn't going to cover his mental state. It's reported it's only going to cover his body, and his mental state, whatever it is, will just be left as it is.
This morning you were tweeting about your mental state. Why did you feel the need to tweet about that this morning?
Well, only because I went to the best colleges for college. I had a situation where I was a very excellent student, came out, made billions and billions of dollars, became one of the top business people, went to television, and for 10 years was a tremendous success, as you probably have heard. Ran for president one time and won. And then I hear this guy that doesn't know me at all. By the way, did not interview me for three. He said he interviewed me for 3 hours in the White House. It didn't exist, okay? It's in his imagination.
Said no smart guy.
No.
In the world.
So obviously, the insecurity that exists inside that clip is absolutely off the charts. A couple of things about the educated Trump. First of all, he knows his mind is slipping. I think he knows it's slipping. And the fact that he is in the position that he's in right now, I believe, is only accelerating it. But there's a couple things that came out this week. First of all, about 2 months ago, I covered the fact that the Wharton School, and that's where Trump went, the Wharton School took a look at the Trump tax plan and said, oh my crap. Wow. What an awful, awful. And when he was pushing the tax plan, he goes, I went to Wharton. I got an MBA. I went to Wharton. Wharton took a look at the tax plan and they said, what an awful plan. Wow. And then this week, two other things came out of Wharton. First of all, Trump says he got an MBA from Wharton. Wharton came out this week and said, nope, he doesn't have an MBA. He has a bachelor's. He didn't finish. And it doesn't make you a bad person if you don't finish college. I didn't get to finish college either, but I didn't get to finish college because I couldn't afford it because I live in America. But he talks about how he's got this MBA from Wharton. And they came out this week, they said, no, he doesn't have that. And he also says he was one of the smartest students, one of the brightest students, right? All his teachers said, gosh, dang it, Trump, you're so bright. Well, one of his teachers came out this week and said, that's about the dumbest kid I've ever had in my class. Although he's not acknowledging that this stuff is happening. That's one of the things he wears on his sleeve, is how proud he is that he went to Wharton, how smart he is. And now Wharton is coming out with all of the facts about his education. That, the pressures of the White House, all of this stuff. It's just got to be coming down on him and crushing him. And I don't necessarily care about him or his mental state, but he does have the nuclear football, and he doesn't give a good goddamn whether he lives or dies. And that is where my concern is. So I've got a clip here from Dr. John Gartner talking about the president's mental state.
The people who work with him closely every day, who are the opposite of a FAR, they are the ones who have the most intimate contact with him. According to this most recent book, but also other reporting, 100% of them, every single person around him, is concerned that he is psychologically unfit and that he is deteriorating and that he seems to have the impulse control, judgment, and attention span of a child. There seems to be clear evidence of organic deterioration on top of his severe personality disorder, the decrease in his vocabulary, in his capacity for logical thought, even his ability to form a sentence, much less think in sophisticated terms, is not recognizing people that he knows, is having difficulty with motor coordination when trying to drink water or is slurring his speech. All of these are signs of pre-dementia. So we have someone who, before he became semi-demented or started on the road to dementia, had a malignantly narcissistic personality disorder, something that combines narcissism with paranoia, antisocial personality disorder, and sadism, so that he was already a maniacal dictator who was divorced from reality. Now he's also losing his cognitive faculties. so that this is someone who is very capable of impulsively and erratically and with poor judgment launching the nuclear codes. And the law is such that he doesn't need anyone to agree with him. He doesn't need a second key. There's no second key. And so we actually are in the position of having a demented madman having the keys to the nuclear codes.
I've heard more than a few people say that it's irresponsible for a doctor, any doctor, to try to diagnose the president without first meeting him, or really any patient. And I disagree with that, and here's why. First of all, running for president, becoming president, I've heard it referred to as a full-body MRI. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, if you're putting on an act, you're only going to be able to put it on for so long, and we're going to find out who you really are. Through the camp, this guy's been in the public consciousness now, in the front of it, for years, and that's embarrassing to say, but he has. We've seen the way he acts towards the media. We've seen the way he acts towards his staff. We've seen the way that he acts towards his supporters. We've seen the way that he acts in public in general, the way he acts towards women, African Americans, Mexicans, Muslims. And then, of course, the people who are with him all the time. And when you listen to those people that are around him all the time that know him, that gives us a much clearer picture. See, if a doctor sits him down and talks to him, he can put on an act for 30, 40, 50 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it takes. Say, nah, doc, I'm fine. I'm completely normal. He can put on an act, but he can't put on an act all the time. Eventually, he's going to let his hair down. Eventually, he's going to tell people what he really thinks and where he's really at. And so this doctor in particular, Gardner, says, yeah, just reading what for people that are around him all the time. And that gives us a much clearer picture. So when Gardner talks about the state that he's in right now, and who the hell are you as a conservative? This guy acts like a child. He's nothing but fast food. You know, he's a misogynist. He doesn't read books. If you're a conservative and you look up to this guy, man, who the hell do you look down on? Oh, I would imagine it's educated people like journalists.
One of the most fascinating parts of the story, for me at least, is this recounting of a meeting in the Oval Office where the president has grown so impatient with the preparation for meeting with Angela Merkel. He then does what, Greg?
He gets up in the middle, in the very early stage of this briefing. They're trying to brief him, prepare him for his meeting with the German chancellor. He gets up, leaves, goes to the bathroom, leaves the door open, and just tells his aides to keep talking. And the way it was described to us is the aides are still sitting around the room with sort of their jaws dropped.
I believe it was LBJ that did that too. But LBJ was obviously a much different animal, a much more capable president. This guy really is acting a child up there in the White House, but he still believes that he has all this power. And that he's so smart. And there is no state. There is no you and I. Trump, he believes that he is the state. This very mentally unstable man believes that he, and he alone, is the state.
This is l'état, c'est moi. This is I am the state. All that matters is me. This is the fever dream of Roger Stone. If Nixon could have run Watergate this way and had the Republican Party defend him, trash the media, trash the CIA, the FBI, everything that is not there to shore up Donald Trump is an enemy of the state, because the state is Donald Trump. It's really frightening when you think about it. As an American, this is not the republic that was set up. Donald Trump is not the state. But in his mind, he might as well be a Romanov. The state is him. And anyone can be an enemy, even the CIA and the FBI. It's really frightening.
And he's becoming increasingly more dictatorial, acting more and more like a dictator. And so he's been empowering dictators around the world by using the phrase fake news, because now dictators all around the world are using that phrase directly from him. And there are dictators that run any number of countries, and they look up to somebody like Donald Trump. And so this is amazing. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and I told you I'm catching these damn press briefings every day now. I'm learning to hate her, but I'm also learning to respect her in a way. I'll talk about that another time. But she was asked, hey, he acts like a dictator. And he's, of course, empowering dictators around the world with the way he talks and the way he's governing. What about that, Sarah?
Take one last question. Connor, go ahead.
In the past day or so, we've seen President Trump attack the press, the Justice Department, and now his former ally, Steve Bannon. By attacking critics and key institutions in our democracy, isn't the president engaging in authoritarian behavior?
Not at all. The president is simply responding often to news of the day. I think if the president can't respond aggressively to an individual like the leader of North Korea that continues to threaten Americans, then that's a dangerous place that we don't want to go down.
You and the president call for critics to be fired from their jobs. That's not the president of North Korea.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the first part of your question.
We've seen both you and the president call for critics to be fired from their jobs.
I don't think it's necessarily critics. We're certainly happy for people that have different opinions, but there's a difference between different opinions and different facts. And people are entitled to an opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And we have a big problem with people putting out misleading information. Those are very different things. Thanks so much, guys.
So just in case you missed the last part of that, peep this again.
Certainly happy for people that have different opinions, but there's a difference between different opinions and different facts. And people are entitled to an opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And we have a big problem with people putting out misleading information. Those are very different things. Thanks so much, guys.
This from the president's spokesliar. They don't even have any kind of self-awareness. And you'll hear it from Republicans that are quitting Congress right now. They'll go, dang gummit, he's a dictator. Dictator. He's a dictator. You know, they're trying to sound the other. He's a dictator.
I'm very concerned, remain concerned, and I'll be speaking more about this in the coming days on the Senate floor, about the president's relationship with truth and this labeling of fake news. When you call fake things real and real things fake, what you do is give comfort to dictators worldwide who want to label protests or their opposition as fake news. And so I think that's tremendous. Tremendously damaging.
That was Jeff Flake, Senator Jeff Flake from Arizona, who is not going to be running for re-election. You take him or Lindsey Graham or Bob Corker, they're all outspoken critics of the president. But even with that, right, and a lot of them aren't running for re-election now because they, holy crap, they don't want to get turfed out this year. Even with that, when the Republicans call him out as a dictator, they don't really care. Jeff Flake, Lindsey Graham, Bob Corker, and other people who have heavily criticized this president are still giving him every single thing that he wants, voting for every single bill that he backs. So they're speaking ill of him in public, but then in Congress, they're giving him exactly what he wants. They're dark days that we're going through right now, but history is cyclical. It goes up, it goes down. You get dictators, you get populists. I mean, history has these times. And it never stays. No country ever stays in this state. Better days are certainly ahead. Better days are only ahead if people get involved. And we can't wait for the next generation or the generation after that or the generation after that if there's anybody left. It has to be us. And it has to be now. And yeah, it's easy to get on a microphone and just piss and moan about everything, right? Or just get on Facebook and mash the keys with your fists. Oh, I'm so mad. But it doesn't do any good if you don't turn out for the election. The presidential elections are easy because the media makes so much money off of those. They promote them so much. Those are fairly good turnout years. But there are midterms, which is this year. There are special elections, which happen all the time. And for those ones, a lot of people don't turn out for. But for those ones are just as important as the presidential elections. Because people are starting to learn now, I believe, how Congress works. And that the president is not a monolith. He does not act alone. Congress matters. Here's where you come in. Join your local Democratic Party. If you're a Republican and you don't like this guy, join your local Republican Party. If you're a Republican and you like this guy, you need your head checked too. There's nothing wrong with being a Republican, but if you're like this guy, bloody hell. But for the rest of us, it's not enough to just register your disgust online. It's not enough to just register your disgust on the radio. It's not enough to just register your disgust through music or writing your journal or mash the keys for Hulk mad. What you need to do is you need to make damn sure that you turn out this year. Yeah, he might last the whole 3 years or whatever it is, or he might only last this one. He might quit the minute he, if the Democrats get both houses, he might just quit at that moment. I can't work with the, I've made America great. Democrats are back in power. Goodbye. And he just might, because he's unpredictable. But if you have the House, the Senate, and it flips to Democratic, it could change a lot of things. You know, and perhaps there could be some checks. Because the Republicans, even when they criticize him, they're not checking him right now. They're still giving him absolutely everything that he wants. And that needs to change. And this is why we need to be involved. And who knows what's going to happen this year? The Russia thing, his health, North Korea, I don't even like to say it. But without us involved, that's the only way we're not going to get a good outcome. Yeah, I know we've got purity tests for politics. If you don't believe exactly what I believe, then I can't pull the lever for you. But we need to get over such childish notions, because it's those kind of childish notions that gave us a man-child as president. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or over on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin producing. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, go register to vote. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.